Good morning, everyone. This is September 30th, 2021. This is the ADK podcast. I am your host, Frank. And today we're going to be talking about the moral or immoral origins of vaccine mandates and mask mandates. Temperatures have been dropping here up in the Adirondacks. My Newfoundland doggo is constantly out there in the yard. She loves it. Everybody else a little bit shivering, but the dog loves it. Big old town meeting last night on cannabis dispensaries. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. Small town politics, always interesting. You know, as they say, small town politics are just national politics viewed from an interplanetary perspective. That's right. So people are predicting cold winter around here. My neighbor says his leaves are clumpy. Apparently that means winter is going to be cold. So let's take a break from the art podcast today and let's take a look at the vaccine and mask mandate questions. Vaccine mandates, of course, went into effect here in New York this week. Most of the media is, of course, downplaying the effects that this will have on employment, downplaying the craziness of a situation where Governor Hochul, in order to support public health, fires a whole bunch of public health workers, prepares to replace them with the National Guard, but, you know, it's okay. She says the National Guard members, they're all medically trained. Yeah. Okay, Kathy. According to Artemis Moshtagian, this is a great name, Artemis Moshtagian on CNN on Tuesday, a couple days ago, 92% of hospital staff, 92% of nursing home staff, 89% of adult care facility staff were at least one vaccine dose in New York. So that's 8% of hospital, 8% of nursing home, 11% of adult care facility that don't have the vaccine at all and are presumably not working anymore. It's 1 out of 10, 1 out of 12 people on staff. That does seem to be about the right number to me, because just judging by what I see going on at the school, people are making a pretty big deal out of this, and there's definitely a significant number. 10% seems about right to me. And now my school staff, right, has to be, if they're not vaccinated, they aren't getting fired, but they have to be tested every week. Not sure that a week is really the right time period there. If week is quite long, and the U.S.'s history of testing is horrible, thanks to the CDC and FDA. So, I should say that speaking of people leaving their workplace because of this, right, this topic is near and dear to my heart because mask mandates are the reason that I am on an unpaid leave of absence from school this year. I cannot deal with masks. The school gave me an ADA waiver, got it signed by all the requisite medical professionals, hired my own lawyer to work through the process, and then the day before a teacher meeting started, my school said, oh, no, that won't work after all. Yeah, so I gave the district 1 year last year, wore my mask every day, even though they kept telling me at the start of the year, oh, you won't have to, no, you won't have to. And then a school started, oh, you do have to, but just for a month, and then another month and another month. You know, it just destroyed my mental health. I can't go back until the masks are gone. So that is my personal experience with masks. So there are clearly health considerations out there, but even beyond those, it's pretty easy to see why mandatory masking in schools is cruel and unnecessary. If you want to talk with someone about why mask mandates are a bad idea for school, just simply ask them, who is this masking for? Right? Why are these kids being forced into masks? It is not for the sake of the kids. There are fewer kids killed every year by COVID than, not every year, there are fewer kids in a year and a half since COVID started. Fewer kids have been killed, less than 400, like it's around 370, according to the CDC, than were killed in a single season of The Food, just a couple of months long in 2019. That's over 450 kids. So the mask mandates are definitely not for kids, unless you think the kids need to be masked to protect them from the flu. Also, the mask mandates are not to benefit the kids. Now, the mask mandates are also not to benefit the vaccinated people either, right? The FDA, they've said that they don't recommend boosters for the vaccinated people because they are protected enough. They're protected enough. They still have a 95% chance or thereabouts of avoiding any sort of a serious outcome, even if they do catch the disease. And that's across all ages at most, you know, ages below retirement age, that even above that chance, and with comorbidities, it scales also as well as age. So the masks aren't on kids to benefit the kids. The masks are not being forced onto the kids to benefit the vaccinated adults. That only leaves one population, the unvaccinated. And why on earth, what could possibly be the moral justification for forcing masks on kids to benefit the unvaccinated? They have chosen to be that way. They have chosen to be unvaccinated. So why on earth would you think it's okay to force kids to wear masks and take on all the costs associated with that? And there are many. I just outlined for you some of my own mental health costs. And certainly that's impacting all the kids that I would have been teaching this year, for example. So there are tremendous costs to wearing masks. And why would you force them on kids just for the sake of the unvaccinated? There's no good justification. There is a justification, a moral principle that's allowing people to do this, and that's the subject we're going to get to here in 1 second. And let me point out that you might be objecting to my argument. You might be saying maybe one of two things about my tidy anti-mask reasoning there. You might be saying, wait a second, there's another group that you didn't list, namely those people who want to be vaccinated but can't. Well, you'd be wrong to raise that as an objection, because, first of all, that group hardly has anyone in it compared to what would be the case with a normal vaccine. Due to the nature of mRNA vaccines, the people who normally can't take vaccines, right, the two biggest groups in that population are organ transplant recipients and then victims of a disease like AIDS that damages the immune system. Well, those people can take this mRNA vaccine, and they have taken it, and they have benefited tremendously from it. And then the second reason you'd be wrong to raise that as an objection is that for the vanishingly small number of people who still do remain in that group that can't get the vaccine no matter what, even though they want to, for that extremely small number of people, there are N99s, there are respirators, there are gas masks, there is isolation that works far, far better than masking school children. It works better, the benefits are higher, and the costs are much, 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 much lower. And then you might also say, oh, 95%, oh, that's still leaving out 5%, 5%, even though the FDA said it's enough. You know, even though the FDA said we don't need boosters because that's good enough protection, 5% of a large number is still a large number. Yes, but then you are being short-sighted, you're being one-sided and myopic, because you are only applying that scaling argument, 5% of a large number is still a large number, you're only applying that to one side of the argument. The other side of the argument, of course, is that even if only a small percentage of kids and adults have an adverse reaction to masks or vaccine mandates, if you're talking about that, a small percentage is still a large number. And moreover, in the case of kids and masks, they still have their entire lives ahead of them. So you get into the quality of average life years and things like that. And Blackstone's formulation would clearly say that you do not have evidence beyond reasonable doubt, and therefore you must err on the side of not violating these kids' ability to dress themselves, these kids' ability to see after their own mental health, and the parents' ability to oversee the kids as they see fit. Blackstone's formulation, of course, very important legal principle. Bedrock of Enlightenment values. Go look it up if you haven't seen it. I will also take a minute to point out here that I am fully vaccinated. I think that every adult should go and get fully vaccinated. I recommend that. But there is a huge difference between recommending something and mandating it. So people will acknowledge that little argument, and then they will just ignore it. And they'll say, okay, maybe it's for the sake of the unvaccinated, but it's still the right thing to do. It's just a minor inconvenience, they will say. They will completely ignore the costs, mental health costs. You know, in my school, the hospitalization rate for attempted suicide last year was 240% above the 2019 national CDC average. 240%. We sent kids to the hospital for attempted suicide. The normal rate is somewhere down in the 1 to 2% rate, and we were up closer to 5 or 6. This is crazy, crazy increase in kids going into hospitals for attempted suicide. So people will just ignore these costs, and they are convinced that no matter the evidence, they're right. They have morals on their side, and morals trump evidence generally in human action. And, you know, Ross Douthat had an article in the New York Times the other day that it was a good piece on how bizarre it is that the left, who's historically been supportive of free thinkers and individuals going against public health advisories. He cited this great example from a left-leaning journal about a public health crisis in Florence a few hundred years ago. The piece was just published in January of 2020, right before all this started. And this left-leaning journal article was in support of the rebels, the people who went against the public health advisories, the people who broke the recommendations to stay just in your house. And now the left has completely reversed itself and is arguing, this is crazy, but they're arguing that it's okay, it's morally correct to see someone in the street and inject drugs into their body against their will. I can't even believe I have to be out here on the internet saying that it's morally wrong to see someone and inject them with drugs against their will. That is crazy to me that the left has abandoned that principle of individuality by which they had stood for many years. The ACLU used to stand up for all kinds of individual rights. Now, just the other day, they're saying that the First Amendment outlaws the Second Amendment. It's unbelievable to me that I have to be here saying, and that it's almost a minority opinion to say that it's not okay to take someone against their will and stick a needle in their arm and put drugs into their body against their will. It's hard to believe that's something that is even controversial at all. But as I said, there is justification for that. What is the moral justification for allowing people to ignore the logical arguments like mine that I just gave you for mask mandates and say, we're still going to vaccinate kids anywhere. We're still going to seize people and force needles into their arm. How can people ignore the absurdity of what's going on in New York with firing people? Well, there are two origins to this morality, this moral justification that allows people to ignore the evidence, ignore the cost, and go on anyway. The first, and it's less important, but it definitely does happen, is sometimes people just take their morals from their leaders. They just think, oh, I'm Blue Tribe. If Blue Tribe's chief says it's morally okay to do this, then that's enough for me. It's an appeal to authority, right? This is thinking by authority. Blue Tribe, best tribe, Blue Tribe forever. Yeah. Just like Janice Ian before the trust fall, and then they fall into the masses and they just go along with whatever the masses are saying. So that's the first moral origin that allows some people to ignore all evidence to the contrary and proceed with hurting people and violating their rights willy-nilly. But most people don't do that. Most people go with the second moral origin, the moral justification for their position. You ask most people, and they will never say, you know, I'm just supporting it because that's what somebody told me to do. Thank goodness people still have enough self-respect and enough self-reliance to say that, to understand that that would be a bad form of reasoning, just appeal to authority. Give it another 30 years, another 40 years, maybe we'll get kids bringing up saying, oh yeah, I just listen to what people tell me and that's the right thing to do. Hopefully we won't have that, but it's not looking good out there. Anyway, what is the second moral origin of the story? Why do people go against the obvious costs and the obvious fact that it's only to benefit the unvaccinated for these masks and for vaccine mandates? Why do they think it's okay to seize people in the street and inject them with drugs against their will? Well, the moral origin is peanut butter. Yes, it is peanut butter. How so? Well, because it started with peanut butter in schools. Now, of course, I'll get to the exact moral principle here in a second, but think about peanut butter in schools. Do you remember back when the Cold War was raging and high school was a savage place? You had smoke pouring out of the bathrooms. You had freshmen getting duct taped to the walls on the regular. Def Leppard pouring sugar out of boom boxes, water balloons zooming up and down the hallways. I remember those days. Pepperidge Farm remembers those days. I remember shirts and skins in gym class. My high school had boxing in gym class, if you can believe that. And I also, if you can believe this, I remember when we had peanut butter in schools. So then someone said, hey, guys, I am not sure. We can't have peanut butter in school because some kids are severely allergic to peanuts. Now, it didn't matter what the evidence was, right? You could look at Matthew Greenhot, I would recommend, University of Colorado, and he's worked in Canada, various universities, and with the Canadian government a lot too. You can look at the studies. It doesn't really matter what the evidence is. You can actually smear peanut butter on the face of these kids who are even severely allergic to peanuts, and they'll be fine. Some of them might get a rash. But, you know, peanut butter in the school cafeterias is not a danger. It just isn't. Not a reasonable danger. You go, like I said, look at the studies. You can smear, they literally do smear peanut butter on these kids' faces, and the minority of them might even get a rash, but most of them who have severe peanut allergies do not react even to peanut butter being smeared all over them. So that didn't matter, though. The people said, look, some kids are allergic, and there is a chance that if you let peanut butter into schools, you know, who knows what could happen? Maybe a bully would ram the peanut butter down their throats. They'd take the peanut butter out of the jar and they would stick it down these kids' throats on a really long tongue depressor and force these kids to ingest peanuts. Maybe, who knows what would happen? I'm saying there's a chance, right? It's dumb and dumber. It really was dumb. Saying there's a chance, so we can't have peanut butter in schools. And everybody else said, oh, yeah. You know what? You're right. We really can't have peanut butter in schools because there's a chance. There is a chance. So no matter how small that chance is, people said, no matter what the costs were, right? A lot of moms like to give their kids peanut butter. A lot of kids in elementary school will only eat peanut butter. I've been through those years with a couple of my kids, right? The point is that no matter what the cost is in quality of life, in arguments with the kids, in time spent on lunch, in money spent on lunch buying something else besides peanut butter, no matter what these costs are, there is a chance. And no matter how small that chance is, there is a chance that a kid could have a bad reaction. So you are a bad, wrong person if you don't help that kid. No matter what the cost is, and no matter how small the chances. I'll say that again. That's the moral principle at work in the peanut allergy situation. And I think you can see that the mask mandate and the vaccine mandate grew out of the same reasoning. Here's the moral principle again. No matter what the cost is, and no matter how small the risk is, if someone needs help, you are a bad, wrong person if you do not help them. Now, Now, let's get the kindness and the legal aspects out of the way first, because you might be sitting there saying, what the hell, Frank? Of course, it is not nice to eat peanuts in a public space where someone else who has peanut allergy is watching Squid Game. And you know what? You are right. It is not nice to do that. It is not nice to eat peanut butter around somebody who has a peanut allergy. But remember, we are talking about mandates here. We're talking about the government using force here. There are plenty of things that aren't nice, that aren't kind, but we do not mandate against them. For a very good reason, the Enlightenment has taught us the value of tolerance. If we allowed mandates against everything that we thought was bad, you would have churches at each other's throats. The Catholics would mandate away Unitarianism, right? Because the Unitarianists support abortion rights. The Catholics would probably mandate against every other religion for not respecting the Pope, and every other religion would mandate, seek mandates against every other religion for not being the true religion. Some religions would even seek mandates against parts of their own church, right? The Methodists in America think that what the Methodists in Africa say about homosexuality, for example, is not nice and not kind. I kind of happen to agree with them. But we don't put mandates in for that. We don't authorize the government to go and haul them away and lock them in a human cage because we think it's not nice and it's not kind. This is the same thing with free speech. Another example is free speech, right? I think usually Voltaire gets credit for saying it. He said, I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. We let Nazis speak. It's not kind. It's not nice. We let socialists speak, despite their obvious willingness to seize a fellow man's property, to force him to labor in the name of the state. We still allow them to speak, and we must. You know, a defense of free speech is probably beyond this podcast episode. Maybe in another one we'll do it. But it will perhaps suffice to note that this tolerance has led to the greatest expansion in welfare in human history by a factor of 1,000 or more. Just some evidence there. Not that utilitarianism is really the way to go, but a brief note for you there. So instead of a daily struggle against starvation and disease and toothaches and half of your children dying before age 5, the Enlightenment has led to Xboxes and Netflix and iPhones and Tylenol and chemotherapy, antibiotics. Tolerance, in other words, is important. Tolerance is good. But there's no room for tolerance with vaccine mandates or with mask mandates. You get vaccinated, you wear the mask, or you're evil. Because, like with peanut allergies, people are saying that it's the right thing to do to help someone, no matter the cost, even if their need for help, even if the risk of something bad happening is very, very small. It doesn't matter the cost. It doesn't matter the risk. If someone needs your help, there's a chance that someone could be hurt, then you have to help them no matter what. So this principle, just to wrap this up here, that's the moral origins of the mandates for vaccines and the mandates for face masks. It's a good lesson about the slippery slope, right? You can't fall down the slippery slope and you say, oh, peanut butter is just a tiny little thing. But once you let that principle get a foothold in people's thinking, then it becomes exploited when it comes to something worse, for example, the vaccine mandates and the mask mandates. Now, to wrap things up, the three reasons why this principle is wrong. We got the kindness and the legal aspect out of the way, right? I pointed out to you that, yes, it's not kind to do some things, but we still don't mandate them. Just because something is not kind is not a reason to ban it. That's the legal and the kindness aspect of it. Now let's look at the moral aspect of it. Three reasons why this principle that no matter the cost and no matter how small the risk is, if somebody needs help or wants help, you must help them, or you're a bad, wrong person. Three reasons that's wrong. First, it's impossible, right? It's impossible to actually carry your life out according to this principle because there are almost 8 billion people in the world. And a whole heck of a lot of them need help. 400,000 kids die each year to malaria. Still, we have 100,000 or more people dying around the world each year to snake bites. So, why aren't you out there helping them? They need help. There is a pretty big chance that kid out there in Uganda is going to die from malaria. You are bad, evil, wrong, according to this principle, if you are not helping them. They need your help, and so you're bad if you're not helping them. Kid in India, he has snakes in his neighborhood. Why aren't you out there killing those asps? Right? According to this principle, you are wrong if you are not out there helping them. And of course, this is impossible. It is impossible to put this principle into practice because the world is a big place. This is original sin. It is making you automatically evil. It is setting you up to fail. Now you might say, oh, Frank, don't be silly. Of course, you can't help the entire world. You should just focus on those near you. Well, who's near me, right? When have I helped enough people near enough to me to be considered a good person? What if I disagree that a person really needs help? What if I disagree that a person is at any reasonable risk from any danger, and so I don't need to really help him? Well, that's really the second reason why this moral principle is flawed, because it takes your moral status out of your control. Suddenly, I need an authority to tell me, oh, you've done enough. Yes, he's close enough. You have to help him. No, that person lives two blocks away, two streets away, two states away, two countries away. You don't need to help that person. You know, where does it end? You don't get to decide that. All of a sudden, is it the majority? Do you just rely on a majority vote? Well, then what about minority rights? Aren't we supposed to be protecting the minority? Of course we must do that. That's why this principle is wrong. It removes your moral agency. It violates the principle of equality. I'm just as qualified to judge morality as anybody else is, but all of a sudden, if you follow this principle, I don't get to decide what is moral for me to do. My actions don't determine my morality. Instead, someone else says, oh, I need help, so you're evil if you don't help me. That is wrong. Man is a sovereign being. We're not hive animals. We're not eusocial animals. Someone else's need is not and cannot be a claim on your actions and your moral status. And the third reason this principle is wrong is, of course, that costs do matter, right? Costs absolutely matter. If you're helping someone, that doesn't grant you a perfect 100% pass to do anything you want. I think this is the one that people really forget a lot in our society today. The school or the government says, oh, I'm here to help. I'm here to help the vulnerable old people who have eaten too many Twinkies, those silly old people, so I can make everyone get vaccinated because I'm trying to help these silly old people. No, it doesn't work that way. Just because you're trying to help someone doesn't mean that you can run roughshod over all their other rights. A lot of times, it's not even that you are helping someone. It's just that you say you're trying to help someone. You think you're trying to help someone. Your good intentions do not give you a pass to go against and violate someone else's sovereign rights, their natural rights. All right, so that's it. That's the moral origin of the vaccine. The mask mandates this idea that if someone needs help, then regardless of the cost and regardless of the risk, you must help them. Or else you're a bad, wrong, evil person. I showed you three reasons why that moral principle is wrong. Number one, it's impossible to practice because it's impossible to reach every single person in the world who needs it or who says that they need it. Number two, this principle takes control of your morality away from you. It puts it in the hands of someone else who gets to decide if you're a good person or not, when in fact, only you can determine if you are a good person or not. And of course, costs do matter. Even if you think you're acting for the good, you are still capable of committing an evil act. And just because you say that you're trying to help someone doesn't mean that you are allowed to violate all of their rights. It's not okay to sacrifice one person for the sake of another. That violates the principle of equality, among many other principles and natural rights. All right, folks, that is it. Tomorrow we will be back with some more art, have some great art talk coming up, and of course, an E. Paul Torrence creativity quiz. Look forward to hearing you, seeing you then. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at ADK Homeroom. Take care.